Local traffic for HBL. All right, I'm Trevor. I'm an alcoholic. You guys nervous? Man, this was not in the plan when I got sober to speak in churches on Sunday night. I just didn't want to be homeless anymore, you know? Yeah, I grew up here. I got a good family. My dad was the opener. Mom was an enabler. Dad was an alcoholic. And, you know, I remember I always had what I needed. I always had what I wanted. My dad liked to party a lot then. So I could be out in the garage with these guys, and they were playing pool, and they were listening to music. And I was like, dude, these guys are having fun. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that suit and tie thing. I want to live like these guys. And my mom tells a story about, I guess in like kindergarten or first grade, the sheriffs come to the school and they bring this little box for the DARE program, and it's got all the drugs in it. And they like tell you what they do to you. And I came home and I was like, man, I can't wait to try this and this and this. And, you know, I remember seeing those commercials, those drug use is life abuse commercials, and seeing like the tornado and the guys like throwing everything away for this alcohol and this drugs. And I remember thinking like, that must be some good stuff. You know, if he's willing to give all that up. I was never someone that said I wasn't going to do this or wasn't going to try that. I kind of had like antisocial behavior from an early age, long before I started drinking. You know, I was weird too. I had all these OCDs. I thought my eyes needed more air, so I'd be like opening them up and flapping my head around. I had to take like 4 steps between each crack in the sidewalk. It had to happen. I had to wash my hands so much they like chapped off, you know, and I needed a drink, you know what I mean? And, you know, my dad got sober when I was 11, and his drinking had kind of changed the last 2 years. You know, it was like a party the first 9 years, and people always over. It was the house to be at. And when his dad died, those last 2 years, it kind of shifted from a party to just being out all the time, you know, passed out early and not being fun anymore. But my mom kept us away from that, you know? And we were going to like Disneyland all the time and movies and arcades. So I was like, dude, this alcohol thing isn't really that big of a deal, you know? Like, you have a long life of fun and then 2 bad years, like I can do that, you know? You know, I started drinking, and I started drinking when I was 12 at on a snowboard bus, blackberry brandy that this old guy gave me. And I didn't even know what was happening. He's like, do you want some of this? I'm like, sure, you know? And then like 15 minutes later, we're out of the bus. And I'm like, I feel great right now. And I didn't even really make the connection of what had happened, that it was this alcohol, you know? Meth is my favorite thing, you know what I mean? And and on that same snowboard bus, when I was 14, I bought some from this girl the night before, because I was like, oh, it'll give me energy. I'm getting up 5 in the morning, going snowboarding tomorrow. And I get on the bus, and I mashed some up on this CD case, and I took that first line, and it was like a whole new world. You know? like this is the answer to my life, you know what I mean? And I had the best day. and I knew right then, I was like, this is going to get me a lot of trouble, because I will do anything to feel like this for the rest of my life. And a couple months later, I went to juvenile hall for the first time for 6 counts of breaking and entering, and attempted murder, and home invasion, and possession for sale, and a bunch of other smaller charges. It was a pretty big misunderstanding. My I had given some drugs to my best friend, some pills, and he overdosed. We did rob all the houses, that all happened, but he overdosed, and when the cops came, he was dead. And they searched me, they found all these pills in my pocket. So they took me to, I remember they were talking outside of the car, and they're like, he's already waiting to go to court for breaking into these houses, we gotta take him. It was the day before my 15th birthday. It was February 19th. And so they took me down to juvenile hall, and I was scared. You know what I mean? I'm this little white kid from South Orange County with all these gangsters. And I'm like, dude, I'm just going to get like jumped tomorrow. You know, like, what's going on? And there was this Mexican kid, an older one, in my like holding cell. He's like, don't worry. He's like, when they ask where you're from, just say nowhere. I'm like, okay, I'm from nowhere, you know? You know, I got through that. I had court in 3 days, and I remember thinking like, okay, I'm gonna get out in 3 days, you know. And I'm telling all the guys in there, and they're like, dude, I don't think you're going home. And Noah was still in a coma. My best friend who overdosed, he was still in a coma, and so they were charged, still charged me with his attempted murder. And my lawyer was like, okay, we're gonna go. We have to push the court off for like a month. And I'm like, a month? Like, I'm supposed to get out today, you know? And I'm like, what happens if I go today? And she's like, they're giving you 6 years in California youth. And I'm like, damn, it was like, I thought I was going home. And so I go back to court. And he lived and came out of the coma. And my parents got a really good lawyer. And I took a strike and pled guilty to the home invasion. And they dropped all the breaking and enterings and switched the attempted murder to aiding and abetting an overdose. So I did a couple months in there and got out. Then they put me on house arrest for a while. And when I was on house arrest, I was like, good. You know, I was staying in my parents' house, and it was the summertime. And I just like, it was safe. You know, I didn't, because every time I go to juvenile hall or I get handcuffs on, like I become a born again Christian right away. It happens immediately. You know, I'm saved. I'm here, Lord. Like, let's do the work, you know? And then as soon as they give me my clothes to get out, I forget all about it. And so I get out and I spend the summer at my parents' house, and then sophomore year's coming up. And I don't know how, I didn't know that this was alcohol. You know, I just thought I liked to drink, but I didn't know how to like do the people thing without putting something in, you know? And so I steal some alcohol, and I'm up to, you know, going to the picture day or whatever. It just started this whole cycle. You know, I'm back in juvenile hall. I'm back in juvenile hall. So my third time in juvenile hall, they were going to give me 8 months or give me this drug court program. So I'm like, okay, drug court, let's do it. You know, we're ready to go. Because I'm sure I'm going to get sober every time I get locked up. I'm 100% sure. So I'm in there, and it was the first time that I sincerely wanted to change. You know, and I'm like making these promises to God, making these promises to my parents and my friends and to myself, like that I'm going to get out and I'm going to do good. And I get accepted into this drug court program, which wasn't supposed to happen because of my charges. And I remember when they gave me my clothes, I was like, you don't have a drug test for 3 days. And I went out that night, and I get drunk, and my probation officer's at my house the next morning. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, I just left to have a few drinks with my friends because they're excited that I got out. And when I would get carried away, I didn't know that was alcoholism. I just thought I changed my mind. You know, I decided to have more, you know? That started just this whole, I was on that program for like 2 or 2.5 years. I completed like 90 days of it, because every time you get a dirty test, they send you back to the beginning. I'm getting tested 4 times a week, and I'm trying to beat these tests. You know, I got a drug patch on my arm that I'm taking off. I'm saying it fell off at work because I work in construction, you know, like all these excuses. Having no idea that I didn't know that once I put anything in me, it's all the same. You know, I thought that like dust off is okay, or you know, huff and blake computer, you know, like ketamine. You know, my goal was always like, okay, we're just gonna drink and do ketamine and acid and shrooms, and like we're okay, we're sober, you know, we're passing drug tests. And I had no idea that like what happens to me is I get drunk, and as soon as I'm like, you know, 8 or 10 shots in, I'm like, we need some meth, dude. Like, you know, and I forget all about the drug test in 2 days, you know, and I just go with it, you know. So you know, I finally get kicked off the drug court program, and I get sentenced to 8 months at this youth guidance center place, YGC, up in Santa Ana. And I was like the model inmate there, you know what I mean? I had them all fooled. And that place is like a military kind of institute. So you go like phase, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three. So at phase three, you're kind of in charge of your whole unit. You know, I'm like telling them what to do. I'm going on furloughs. I got a job. Like, I'm doing good. And I'm sneaking drugs back into the institution, you know, but we would never get high on our furloughs. We just bring them back in and then use them there. I had like 3 weeks left, a month left, you know, and I go on one of these 8 hour furloughs, and I just get high the whole time, and come back, and I'm a bust. You know what I mean? they give me more time, 2 more months, you know, and I just thought there was something completely different with me. I'm like, why do I always mess everything up when it's going good? You know, like everything's going good, and at the last second, I mess everything up, you know? So I get out of there when I'm 18 and keep getting in trouble and decide I need to run away to Reno, you know, to avoid prison. So I run away to Reno with this girl, and you know, we're out there, and I think that moving to Reno is going to fix everything, you know? And I get out there, and it's just the same thing over and over, you know? And after 4 years, she leaves, and I got this horrendous, you know, heroin and cocaine habit. And she leaves me in this house with three dogs or two dogs and three cats and this habit, you know, and I'm like, I don't know what to do here. You know what I mean? And, my friend Noah, the same one that died, comes up and he got sober then, and he comes up and, helps me pack everything up, moves me back down here. And I think when I move back down here, it's going to be like a party again, you know, like everybody's excited that I'm back. And I get back here and everybody has like grown up, you know, so they're like going to school and they have jobs and they're like responsible. And that wasn't the case for me, you know? So me and that, the girl that left me, moved back into another apartment down here, and I lost it. You know what I mean? I used to see those people that were tweaking that, you know, they'd have the mattresses on the wall and their carpet all ripped up and electronics dismantled. And I'd be like, you guys are a mess. Like, you need to get it together, you know? And I moved into this apartment, and I just got the idea that the whole world was making a movie about me, and which was fine. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it. This is entertaining shit going on here. You make a movie, and I just need some money, you know, to keep this party rolling. And so these people are making this movie about me. And the closer you were to me, the more in on the whole thing you were, you know. So like, you're really in it, you know. And there's two. A lot of people had two of them, you know, and a lot of actors involved in this whole thing. And I'd be having these standoffs with these people, you know, and these standoffs would come at about, you know, 5 to 8 days of staying away. We had this 357 that I'd be firing through pillows into the, you know, wherever they were hiding, you know? I was just trying to hold them for ransom was really all I wanted, you know, cause I knew they had some kind of technology that was far greater than mine, you know, cause they were able to evade me. You know, I'm not sleeping and these people are evading me for days, you know, so they got something going on. So I'd be sliding ransom notes into like the air conditioning ducts and all this stuff, you know, and using those, you know, those bug bomb things that used to like fumigate. So I got my face tied up with like wet rags and I'm tossing these smoke grenades all around the house and it's just a scene, you know. And then finally, when they don't pay the ransom, I'm like, all right, you guys are screwed. I'm calling the cops, you know. And so I call the cops, and the cops took it serious, you know, because they weren't used to this. So they come in like a whole squad of them, and it's a one bedroom apartment. It's like, there's not that much room, you know. So they come in and they're like, there's nobody in there, you know. And I'm showing them things in the walls and pictures on my phone, and they're like, dude, I don't know what's going on. Like, are you okay, you know? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I got my electronic engineering technician degree from the Career College in Northern Nevada. Like, I know what I'm talking about, you know? I'm not a retard over here. And so the first time that happened, they came in, and it was like the third or fourth time. We had that gun, and we were in a standoff behind the ottoman, and they were in the bedroom. Yeah, we had an ottoman, you know. I told Danielle, I'm like, when the cops get here, we slide the gun under the couch and army crawl out the door, you know. She's like, okay, you know. So the cops come, I slide the gun under the couch, she grabs it and crawls through the cop's legs with the loaded gun, so they took the gun away, which was probably a good thing, you know. The final standoff was I had a lot of yeah. I thought they were on. I stole a van from work because I was always trying to like change the playing field, you know. I knew that they had the apartment figured out, and so I was trying to find like new battlegrounds that only I knew that they weren't aware of yet. And So my plan was like, okay, we're going to go, I'm going to go into work and I'll leave the alarm on so that it gives them ample time to get in, you know? And then I'm going to sprint down to the alarm and set it and lock the door, you know? And then I'm going to break the window so the cops come and they'll be trapped. and so the plan went as it was supposed to go. But the alarm wasn't working for some reason. So I'm throwing these lead pipes from the second story down through the window, and the cops never came, you know? So I'm like, okay, I gotta get out of here, you know? So I get one of the vans and I'm driving the vans, and somehow they've gotten onto the roof of the van on the rack, you know? And so I'm like, all right, you guys are screwed, dude. So I just take this thing like 50 miles an hour, right at Nellie Gale into a telephone or a streetlight pole, you know, to throw them off, you know? And then I run up into horse stables. I didn't realize there's all these horse stables up there, you know? And I'm in like, you know, we weren't really big on laundry. So I'm in like this like white button-up shirt and shorts, you know, a long sleeve button-up shirt and shorts, and I'm crawling through horse pastures, and the cops are down there, you know, because there's a car accident. And I make my way over to that Hills Hotel there, and I'm checking in, and I'm like, wait. I'm like, hey, is it okay if I check in under a different name? And they're like, yeah. and I'm like, yes. So I tell them like Diana something or other. And then I go in the room and I pass out, you know, and the next day, I like way overslept, you know, and the next day I go back home to Danielle and she's like, where were you? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I tell her the whole thing that happened, you know, cause she thought the whole stuff was going on too. And she's like, who are you at the hotel with? I'm like, call them. See who I say with. And I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, actually, like, funny story. I checked in under a girl's name. it was like Easter 2 days later. I got the steering wheel mark on my forehead. You know, it was just chaos, you know? And you know, eventually she left and I'm at this apartment, and you know, the power had been off for a long time there. And I'd taken out a wall and removed all the carpet, and taking apart the oven and the fridge because there were supercomputers in both of them. And supercomputers was what I decided. I thought like I might need to get sober, you know? So I remember I called Hoag Hospital, and I swear to God, they talked to me for like 3 hours on the phone or something, you know? Cause they're asking all these questions like, do you want to die? And I'm like, obviously, you know, like life's not going good. and at the end, I was trying to get into the outpatient program, and it wasn't that serious, you know. And at the end, they're like, okay, just stay sober for 3 days and come on in. And I hung up the phone and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, like there's no way I could stay sober for 3 days. I've been trying to stay sober for a day forever, and I can't. You know, I went to the I went and checked into that hospital, and I was there for a few days, and I left against medical advice. And that same Noah picked me up. That's been in all the story, and I'm begging with him in tears to take me to Santa, you know, because I don't know how to do life, you know, I don't know how to do the world, and he's like, no, dude, we're going to this Able to Change program, so he takes me there, What I had always believed is this Alcoholics Anonymous is a great program, you know, and I'd seen it work for my dad. I'd seen it work for a lot of my friends. I thought that I was different than the rest of you guys. You know, I didn't think that you guys thought all the love songs had been written about alcohol and drugs. You know, I didn't think that you guys just loved it the way that I loved it. You know, I would hear about resentments in here and all this stuff, and I'm like, that's not me. I just love the effect. You know, I love the effect. So I go to this Able to Change, and there was a meeting that night, and the house manager guy was like, he's like, hey, you don't have to go because you just got here, but you can if you want to, you know? So by now I've probably been to like 1500 meetings. You know, I started getting quarter a day when I'm super young, you know, and in and out of all these different centers and programs and stuff. And I go to this meeting, and it's in this girl's backyard, and I know this girl, and her brother's there, and her brother is a guy that I know, you know, and he drinks and does drugs exactly the way that I do. And he shared, and he had like 30 or 60 days or something. And I was like, oh my God, like if he can stay sober, I can stay sober, you know? And I didn't realize it, but that was step two for me, which was the biggest step for me. I knew I was an alcoholic. It was obvious my life was unmanageable. I didn't think that what was working here for you guys could work for me. And so I remember I left that meeting and I'm calling everybody and I'm like, dude, I think this program can work for me. You know, and they're like, yeah, we hope so. You know? It's about time. I'm there for like, what happens to me when I get to those places, treatment centers, any of that? Like I get there and I'm done with alcohol and drugs. Like day one through four, you know, I'm done. And never going to touch it again. You know, like I promise, I hate it. You know? And then I start to feel a little better. I sleep, I eat some food. Like I start to feel a little bit better. And then I start thinking in my head about why that last run didn't work out the way that it was supposed to, you know? And why I didn't have more money, or why I was at that hotel, or why I took that freeway, or why was I with that person? And it was always like something external that needed to change. It was never that like, hey, dude, you can't put anything in you. It's going to end the same way every single time. Doesn't matter what you start with, it ends exactly the same. So at 30 days, you're allowed to leave there. And you know, that same girl from all the stories picks me up and we go to get a cup of coffee and we end up in Santa Ana. And by now, like the best part of alcohol and drugs for me is that anticipation. You know, it's how good it's gonna be, you know? So I've been sober for 30 days now. This is gonna be amazing. And I'm up in Santa Ana and I'm doing what I do and I'm telling Gustavo that you know, like, hey, if you ever want to get sober, that AA program works. And he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I don't know, you know? I spent the next, you know, 6 or 8 months going in and out. And I'm sleeping in my 4Runner now at the time. And I remember calling my parents and saying, you know, can I come home? And they said, yeah, you know? My sister was home from Japan. My sister's like the exact opposite, like stunt worker, full scholarship to college, like did everything right. And she was visiting from Japan. And so I come home the next day was, they were going to the zoo and I'm like, I don't think I can do the zoo, but like, I'm going to sit here. And I sat there and that same girl that I've been running around with called me. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I can't do it anymore. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I don't know, but I can't do it anymore. And it was that moment of clarity. You know what I mean? It was the first time I didn't have an answer for something. You know, like I am a quick thinker. I'm a quick talker. I think I'm smarter than everybody. And it was the first time I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to do, but that we've been doing is not working out. I started going to meetings I met my first sponsor, Josh. I had like 7 days sober and he's like, he told me to call him every day at 4 o'clock. He said, set an alarm on your phone, call me every day at 4 o'clock. Tell me what you've done that day for your sobriety. And afterwards we can talk about anything you want to talk about. So I'd call him every day at four. He'd tell me what we were doing that night. He'd pick me up. And at about 90 days, he's like, we're going to do your fourth and fifth step. He had just gotten off parole and he was finally allowed to leave the county. So he's like, we're going to go to Santa Cruz. We're going to do your fourth and fifth step. And I'm like, Josh, we haven't done one, two, and three. And he's like, well, you know, you're an alcoholic, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, and you know, your life's unmanageable. That's why you call me every day and ask me what to do. I said, okay. And he said, do you believe there's something here that's working for the rest of us? And I said, yeah. And he said, and you're actively trying to turn your will and your life over to that thing? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, that's one, two, and three. You've been overcomplicating. And it was the most profound thing I've ever heard in this program. And he is not profound at all. Not at all. Yeah. But it was the first time that like I come in here and I read these steps. I'm like, that does not work, dude. You know, like I've taken myself through those steps in jail cells and everywhere, like so many times, and it doesn't work. You know? It was the first time I realized that it has nothing to do with me. It's all about what I do. And we went up and we did my fourth and fifth step. And I finally felt like a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, now I got like some commitments at meetings. This was January 16th of 2010 was my first sobriety day. So this is probably, you know, 6 months after that. And I'm like living in AA, you know, I got all these sponsees. I got married. I'm going to like 7 or 8 meetings a week. And I started having kids at like 4 years sober. And I had my first kid. And, you know, my 7 or 8 meetings a week dropped down to like four. And I had my second kid, and my 4 meetings a week dropped down to like one. And that one got really easy to cut out, you know? And after about 2 years of that, I thought, you know, like all that crazy stuff when you were a kid, like it was probably just because you didn't have any responsibilities or like anything you cared about. Like you didn't care if you went to jail. Like it didn't make a difference to you. And I thought, you know, in the big book, it says, if you think you're not an alcoholic, step over the nearest bar and try some control for you. So this is me at, you know, 7.5 years sober, the best thing. And and so I'm like, I'm going to go into the bathroom because we don't have any alcohol in the house. And I'm going to take 3 shots of mouthwash. And if I stop drinking after the 3 shots of mouthwash, I'm not an alcoholic. And and I go into the bathroom and I take the 3 shots of mouthwash. And I like, and I leave and I feel it. And I'm, oh my God, I'm cured. You know, like the best news ever, you know? And so now I got like a little pint of mouthwash in the car. And like, I'm like, dude, this is fantastic. I wish I found this up earlier, you know? And I used to laugh at people in meetings when they talk about drinking mouthwash. I'd be like, dude, you guys are an alcoholic, man. Like, you need to get your life together, you know? And here I am. That's my best thinking. You know, this is what I got going. And I thought, man, this mouthwash thing's going pretty good. I bet you could start shooting dope in that same manner, you know? But that could work out too. And so I started that. And you know, it was just this progressive 2 year, you know, just got divorced, alienated everybody from my life. And it was slow and progressive, you know what I mean? It was not there was no run involved. You know, it was me just trying to, I'd never tried to control and enjoy my drinking. I'd always just done whatever I wanted to do as long as I could do it until I ran out and ended up in jail. That was how it worked for me. And I was okay with that. This was the first run, that 2 year run. There was no fun in it. You know what I mean? It was me trying to just basically put enough different stuff in me to act normal, you know, because once I start, I can't stop. So I got the meth and heroin in the garage. I got the alcohol in the freezer. I got weed in the back. Sometimes I got some Valium, you know, and I'm just kind of buzzing around the house trying to like fool the kids and fool the wife that I'm doing good, you know, and it just didn't work, you know, and after a little bit of that, I remember saying, you know, every day I'd be like, tomorrow you're not going to do this. Tomorrow you're going to get up and you're going to go to that hardcore harbor meeting. And in the morning I'd wake up, I get up at 3:30 for work and I couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do it. I'd be over the stove with a little microwave light, trying not to wake up the kids. And how did this happen? You know, and remembering like I was just sober. Life was good, you know, and it was terrifying because I thought that I really think the surrender here is a gift, you know, in my experience. Like I've tried everything I can do to make a surrender happen for myself, you know, and for me, it's always come through pain, like tremendous pain, you know, And I remember thinking, I'm not going to get it again. You know, I'm just going to be, and I'm not even getting high. I'm not even getting drunk. Like this is the worst case scenario, you know, cause I'm just watching my life go down and down and down and I can't even get the effects in. I remember I went to my dad probably a year or year and a half in and I'm like, I know I got to stop the hard stuff, but like, if I could just stick to like drinking and smoking weed and these pills, like it works, you know? And he's like, well, try and get a day. And I was like, I can't get a day. There's no way that I can get a day. You know, so now I'm divorced and I'm kicked out of the house and I'm sleeping in my truck down at the beach. I always go down to the beach when I'm sleeping in my truck because I feel like it's more of a vibe. You know? It's not so bad, you know. you don't feel as bad about yourself, you know. And it was COVID. It was April of 2020, so everything was. It was like the bad part of COVID, you know, the beginning. So all the bathrooms are locked. The showers are turned off. The water fountains are turned off. So I'm just sleeping in this truck and wondering what happened to my life, you know? And it was a Thursday, April 2nd. And I remember I hadn't prayed in, I was like, man, I haven't prayed in years, you know? And I just said, God, I can't do this. You know, I didn't ask for help. I didn't say it. I said, I can't do this anymore. And the next morning, Friday, April 3rd of 2020, I woke up in that truck, still had all the stuff I needed. And something was different. It was the first time in that 2 year relapse that I woke up and was able to, I didn't have that overwhelming obsession to change the way I felt right when I started the day, you know? I started hopping on Zoom meetings. All the meetings were closed. Zoom saved my life. You know what I mean? Because I was able to just like those days are long sleeping in your truck with nobody wanting you around, you know? And I would just sit on those Zoom meetings all day. You know, they had them all day. Called a sponsor, started going through the steps with him. And I was so grateful, you know, that I had gotten a day because that seemed so elusive to me, you know? Started going to Zoom meetings and I started hanging out in recovery. A few meetings started opening back up. I met Christine and we just started doing life together. You know what I mean? No intention of ever being together. It was just, you know, two people going through life. Started going to meetings, started going bungee jumping, doing all this fun stuff. And I remember at about 4 or 8 months sober, I was in Long Beach Harbor and it was like, we'd been doing stuff all day it was like 11 at night and we were getting back to this boat in Long Beach Harbor, they got this, waterfall in the middle and they put these lights behind it. And there's like, so it's like this colorful rainbow waterfall and it was a full moon. And the ocean was just like glassy, like a lake, you know? And we're like debating, like, do we go back out? Do we not go back out? You know? And we're like, whatever, let's go. And so we paddle out to this like waterfall thing. And I remember thinking like you would have missed all of this, you know? And it wasn't any of the external stuff. It was that I was okay where I was, you know, like I felt happy in that moment. And I wasn't worried about all the stuff going on around me. I wasn't worried. I wasn't living in regret. I wasn't worried about the future. And it was like a spiritual experience, you know, and I was paddling out there and just looking at all the glass. There was like no noise, nobody around. And it was crazy, you know, and I live for moments like that because my head is nuts, you know, and it takes a lot of work for me to shut it down, you know? Another one I remember I had, probably had like, you know, a year of sobriety or something like that. And we have five kids between the two of us. So it's always chaos, you know? And we were, my son at the time was like three, so he hadn't been on that many escalators. And so we're in Barnes and Noble and Christine and our friend Jordan, who brought her kid too, are like looking at books or something. So it's me and six kids and they're riding up and down the escalators and just screaming, you know, we're playing like the floor is lava with the yellow part of the escalator thing, you know? And I remember like the sixth trip or something like that, thinking like, oh wait, we're in the bookstore. We should be quiet. And I remember thinking like, I don't really care. And I'm always so concerned with how I look and what people think about me and what are they going to judge me? I'm being too loud, you know? I would have never been able to do something like that when I was three, you know? And I might've done one or two trips, but I would have been so overly concerned with the way the world was doing, you know? And I would have just wanted to get back home. You know, I still did the whole dad thing while I was out there. But I was so tense all the time, you know? My life has gotten extremely good, you know? I got a ton of sponsees. Well, I got three right now, actually. Three new ones. I got some with more time that don't call anymore. I just never thought that, I never really thought that life could get good anymore, you know? And life being good for me doesn't look like anything on the external, you know? The first time I was sober, I was like fully recovered, you know, and figured it all out, you know, and I was speaking at all these big things and my pride was what got in the way of me, telling my sponsor that I thought I could drink again, you know, cause I'm like, I've spoken at all these big events, you know, like I can't tell this guy that I'm thinking about drinking again, you know? I've really learned that, it's okay to not be perfect, you know, and I'm never going to be perfect and I'm going to mess up all the time. There's that saying like, you know, you just got to change one thing and that's everything, you know? And I hate that saying. Because I used to hear that stuff when I was new, and I'm like, how the hell do you do that? You know, like it's insurmountable to me. And you know, my dad was talking about his sponsor, his first sponsor, Dick, and that guy was a rear admiral in the Navy. He was like super high up. And he would say, you know, if you just change the course of the boat 5 degrees and you're aiming for Hawaii, you end up in, you know, somewhere way different, you know? And I like that a lot better, you know, because I'm not somebody that can change everything at once, you know? And I gotta be easy on myself with making mistakes. You know, I would come in here with in early sobriety, and I would see guys at the podium or sharing or whatever, and about honesty and all this stuff, and I'd be like, man, like if they only knew what I did, you know, like this is in sobriety, you know, and thinking that I'm so different than it, you know, and I had to give myself some grace and be okay with making mistakes in here, and realize like I'm not gonna come in here and get perfect right away, you know. I'll never be perfect. At 2.5 years sober, I had like a full second surrender here. You know, I had always thought that like I'd taken the third step, because for me to come out of like, you know, sleeping in my truck at the beach and just removing the alcohol and the drugs, like my life gets dramatically better. Not trying to come up with a couple hundred dollars a day to stay well. You know, my life gets a lot better. And you know, I moved into my parents' house after that, or a wood shop first, and then to my parents' house. And then an apartment. So I'm like doing the steps, and I think I got it, but I'm still like manipulation and lying they're my core tools for life, you know? And I wouldn't have even really known that, you know, but I got put on probation super young, and that was my game. That was what I had best. It's like I can outwit these guys. I can talk smooth to this judge or this probation officer or this cop, and I can get my way, you know? And I wouldn't even really see it as manipulation or lying. I would get here and I would think, I'm just twisting the words a little bit so that you view it the way that I want you to view it, you know? Which to me was acceptable. You know, I didn't realize that that was not rigorous honesty, you know? Rigorous honesty seemed super far away. It was basic honesty I was trying to grasp, you know? And so at 2.5 years sober, you know, manipulation and lying are like my biggest character defects, you know, I'd say. And I'd gotten myself into that same sort of feeling that alcohol and drugs got me, and I had no excuse this time, you know. I remember thinking, you know, when it all came out, I remember thinking like, you should just go pick up some dope, because at least you have an excuse, you know, like say you started a week ago, and at least you have an excuse for your actions. And I had to kind of come through that. You know, there's a saying in here, you grow where you go. And I had to realize that that was the first time that step three actually kind of meant something to me, you know, because all this control and manipulation that I want to do, it's for you guys, you know, it's not for me. It's like, the way I see it, it's so that you guys are okay, you know? And I had to realize like, hey, regardless of it, the way that any of the world turns out, all that matters is that I do the next right thing, you know? And it doesn't matter because of the way that it affects anybody else. It matters because of the way that I feel about myself. It was the same as alcohol. There's no getting away with anything for me. You know, I always used to think like I was getting away with drug tests from my probation officer. Like, ha, he has no idea. You know, I just been drinking and doing acid all week. Like he doesn't, you know, like, and I was winning. That was a win, you know? And I didn't realize that the same way that I wasn't winning with that, you know, because I was just starting that whole allergic reaction off. It's the same thing with lying and manipulation or any of that stuff. You know, I start and I get sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker. The way Clancy talks about it is he talks about there's like a spring inside of his stomach that just gets tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And when that happens, something's got to change, you know? And it's either going to be me or my sobriety date, you know, because I don't know, I don't know how to deal with people and emotions and all that. So yeah, 2.5 years sober, I have this big, you know, kind of full surrender to that. I need to live honestly. Not that I'm perfect or something, you know, but I'm way better than I was, you know. You know, life today is good. I go to a lot of meetings. I always say yes when people ask me to do something. Like this is not on my list of things I wanted to do. Like if you would have told me to list 80 things I wanted to do Sunday night, this would have been like, you know, 72. But I've learned that like God doesn't show up when I expect it. You know, I don't go to like a sound bath and come and have a spiritual experience. Yeah, it doesn't happen that way. You know, it happens when I'm moving some guy that I really don't want to move, when it's hot in Marietta or something, you know, and I got other stuff I want to be doing, and something happens and I'm like, oh, that's the reason here. You know, that first time I got sober, I had about a week, and we used to go to this hospital meeting, and I'd been going to that meeting for years, and I finally really wanted to be sober, and they were doing commitments, and I'd always like gotten to meetings, sat there, and left when they ended. You know, that was what I got my court card signed and left when they ended, and thought I was doing A, and finally I get this commitment, a greeter commitment. They didn't even have a greeter commitment, and they made one for me. So I was like, okay, these people recognize how amazing I am, you know, finally, you know. and so I start greeting people at this meeting, and I start getting to know everybody, you know, and I'm remembering their names, and they're saying hi to me. And then I'm like, dude, I'm going to share, you know, and I start sharing in these meetings, you know, and asking people about their share that they did last week and how it turned out and all this stuff. And like becoming a member of AA without really knowing that I become a member of AA. This program's got nothing to do with what I think or me thinking my way through things. It's all what I do and my actions. I can never think my way into feeling better. Never happens. You know, I can't tell you how much I argue with people in my head driving that don't even know I'm mad at them, you know, and, just stupid stuff like that, you know, and negative meditation is what I call it, you know? And I gotta not do that. You know, when that comes up, I don't really think about alcohol and drugs anymore. It's not really an issue for me. All that stuff's an issue, you know? And I just treat it the same way I treat, you know, thinking about drinking or drugs. Like, God remove this obsession, you know, because I don't need to be thinking about that. I want to have a clean side of the street with everybody around me. Thank you guys for letting me share. That's all I got.